Welcome to Dealmaker Diaries, where business meets opportunity. The podcast that takes you on a thrilling journey through the world of commercial real estate and mergers and acquisitions. Join us as we unravel the secrets behind the rise and fall of industry titans, explore lucrative investment strategies, and dive deep into the captivating stories that shape the ever-evolving landscape of business. Through in-depth interviews with industry experts, CEOs, and influential thought leaders, we uncover the hidden gems of commercial real estate, unveil the secrets of lucrative property acquisitions, learn how to identify emerging markets, and gain a deep understanding of the negotiation tactics that seal million-dollar deals. But that's not all. Dealmaker Diaries also delves into the thrilling world of mergers and acquisitions. Discover the stories behind high-profile mergers, hear from the masterminds who orchestrated billion-dollar transactions, and gain exclusive insights into the strategies and intricacies of successful M&A deals. Whether you're a seasoned investor or a curious listener, Dealmaker Diaries offers a treasure trove of knowledge, empowering you to make informed decisions, spot lucrative opportunities, and navigate the ever-changing tides of the commercial real estate and M&A markets. Available on all major podcast platforms, subscribe today and let us be your trusted guide in the fascinating world of commercial real estate and mergers and acquisitions.
Welcome, Dealmaker Diaries community. Today, we're thrilled to have a true force of positive disruption in the real estate realm on our podcast. The one and only Lindsay Sharma, founder of Lindsay Sharma Property Buyers. Buckle up as we embark on a journey with Lindsay, a seasoned entrepreneur with a heart of gold, specializing in transforming lives through real estate. From rescuing distressed properties to being a beacon of support for homeowners facing financial turbulence, Lindsay's company isn't just about transactions, it's about creating meaningful solutions and building lasting relationships. Get ready to unpack the stories of Patrick and Shirley, homeowners whose lives were transformed by Lindsay Sharma Property Buyers' innovative and compassionate approach. But that's just the beginning. Lindsay's unique blend of business acumen, empathy, and a mission-driven mindset is sure to inspire and captivate. Join us as we delve into Lindsay's real estate strategies, the lessons learned from challenging deals, and the unwavering commitment to making a positive impact in communities. It's a Dealmaker Diaries episode you won't want to miss. Let's go. Hi, Lindsay. Welcome to the show. How are you today?
Doing well, Donald. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks. Thanks for joining us today. It's great to have you on.
I'm excited to be here.
And am I pronouncing your name correctly? Is it Lindsay?
Oh, well, it's Lindsay.
Lindsay, okay.
You know, but I get Lindsay a lot just because of the way I spell it. I spell it with an A instead of an E, so it's not terribly common.
Okay. All right, great, but the same pronunciation. All right, so yeah, before we jump in, why don't you give the listeners a little bit of your background and tell us a little bit about how you got into real estate?
Sure. So I grew up in the Midwest. I grew up in Toledo, Ohio, and I was fortunate enough to go to college. I have a degree in graphic design. And when I graduated, it was 2007. So, of course, we know the financial crisis happened in 2008. And I had a really hard time finding a job in my field. My first job was renting trucks for Penske Truck Rental, which isn't very similar to graphic design at all. And I kind of job hopped for quite some time just because the economy was so bad in the area that I lived in. And during that time, I started freelancing as a designer, and I kind of learned how to talk to people, talk to businesses, and really promote myself and kind of get clients on my own, which was very scary for me. And then several years later, I started my own graphic design company, did that for a while, kind of burned myself out. Went into corporate for a little bit. And then during that time, I was doing a lot of self-education on finances, wealth building, started learning about passive income. And I got really interested in real estate investing. I was reading books, listening to podcasts, and I was just too scared to get started. I didn't really know how to start. So I thought, well, why don't I see if I can get into the industry? Because it was an industry change for me. I was doing design work. I was in the creative field. And I thought, well, maybe I can find a job in real estate investing and learn from somebody else, you know, and get paid to do it. So that's exactly what I did. I was fortunate enough to get hired by an investor in my city. And I was his executive assistant. And because I was his executive assistant, I was involved in every aspect of his business. He was a small business owner. And I was able to really see how everything fit together, the marketing, the sales, dispositions, you know, finding deals, all of it. So it was a really just fortunate experience for me. And so I worked for him for about 3 years, and then I started my own company. And what we primarily do is we wholesale properties, and then I'm also building my portfolio. I really like the strategy of creating notes. I like to buy mobile homes on land. I do have some single families, and I do have a small multifamily. So I'm kind of diversifying a little bit, but really just trying to build my portfolio, and then also wholesaling just to kind of pay the bills.
Okay, awesome. All right. And I was reading up on your company. So it seems your mission at Lindsay Sharmer Property Buyers goes beyond just real estate transactions. Can you share more about how your company's commitment to problem solving aligns with your personal values?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I got into real estate investing, first of all, I really didn't know what that meant. And then when I kind of got into the daily grind of it, I realized the type of people that we were working with, you know, to buy distressed properties. A lot of times you come across people who may be in situations that just aren't the most, you know, you hear a lot of stories, really, and you just meet a lot of different people. And so I thought it was really, as I started talking to these sellers and working leads myself, I thought it was really important just to be a human and build a relationship. You know, I've seen a lot of wholesalers kind of do anything to get the deal, and then, you know, they can't find a buyer, they cancel, and they leave the person high and dry. And there's just kind of, there can be a lack of ethics sometimes. So I wanted, when I was building my business, I wanted that to be one of the main focuses, just putting people before all else. And if we can't buy their property, if we're not their solution, what resources can we give them? So, you know, one thing we do is we have a community packet of resources, whether it's legal aid, you know, things that people just may not be aware of that we can give them in the event that we can't help them solve their problem. But that's mainly what we're trying to do. That's the value we bring.
Okay. Yeah, and it's inspiring to see your dedication to giving back to the community as well. Can you tell us more about the impact your company is making through the 5% donation to Women and Children First?
Yeah, so that's another thing I thought was really important with my company. I want to make sure that everything we do, we are at least giving part of our profit back into the community. And, you know, as a woman, as a mother, it really touches me that there's women's shelters. You know, I'm an advocate for women, and domestic violence is a huge problem. So that's why we donate and support the women's shelters. I don't know the number off the top of my head, but I read a statistic somewhere along the lines that more women have died from domestic violence than any casualty in all the wars in history.
I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah, it's a huge issue. So I'm just very passionate about it.
Okay. And as a wife and mom to three little ones and a business owner, you wear many hats. So how do you manage to balance family life with the demands of running a successful real estate business? Are there any tips for other entrepreneurial parents out there?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a major one for me is just asking for help, learning to delegate, and being very protective of my time. I'm fortunate enough to be married, and my husband is a 50-50 partner, meaning we both work and we both share about 50% of the domestic tasks. as well as the childcare. He's in charge of the morning routine. He gets the kids ready for school, takes them to school. I'm in charge of the night routine. I do their baths and get them ready for bed. And, you know, we've just learned to really have very clear roles in our household. So it makes sure that everything that needs to get done gets done. And so I think that's just really important for balancing it all.
Yeah, definitely. And I like your quote, success in real estate comes from being a caring and empathetic investor, not just a salesperson. That resonates deeply mm-hmm. with me. So how do you incorporate empathy into your approach when dealing with sellers, buyers, and partners in the real estate industry?
Sure. So I think what makes a really successful salesperson or anyone in the services or business, anyone who deals with people, is being a good listener. So always listening more than you're talking, asking good questions to really understand the situation. And I think you build a lot of trust by doing that and just being a human, connecting on a human level. You know, everyone I talk to, I just try to find something that we might have in common. And then if they're pouring out, if people are telling you their tough situations and their problems, just holding space for them and being present with them, I think just goes a really long way.
Okay. And another interesting thing, your husband's journey from India to the U.S. adds a fascinating dimension to your personal story and hits home with me as well, having a Japanese wife. So how has cultural diversity played a role in shaping your perspective on business and community engagement?
Yeah, it's very interesting. My husband's from India. He moved to the United States in the mid-2000s, and he actually got his citizenship through serving in the U.S. military. So he was in the Army. And, you know, when we met, I was in my early 30s. And, you know, I learned so much about the Indian culture through him that I just wasn't aware of before. I just didn't really know very many Indian people. And he speaks four languages. I only speak one language. So I think with our family, that's one of the goals we have, is just to really open our children up to different languages. My husband's entire family lives in India, and he's the only one here in the United States. He speaks English, but a lot of his family members don't really speak English. But we FaceTime them every day so they can talk to our kids, and they speak Hindi to our children. So we're just trying to expose them and teach them, you know, the language of their father, basically. But I think living in a multicultural family has really taught me how to put myself in other people's shoes. I think learning a lot of our, you know, kind of learning, I do a lot of research on like India and culture because, it's just sometimes you don't see eye to eye on issues. And it's like, is this a personality issue? Is it a cultural issue? Is it both? And so I think understanding the perspective of where someone grew up really helps you understand their behavior, their motives, and allows you to better connect with them and solve problems together.
Yeah, definitely. I can absolutely agree with that and attest to that being in a multicultural household myself. So you're definitely right. There are challenges, right, where you're not agreeing. You say, yeah, is this culture? Am I just being stubborn? Is she being stubborn? Or could it be a mixture right. of both? So yes, definitely.
Yeah.
Challenging and rewarding, though, for sure.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And we talk a lot in my house, you know, that we are, you know, we have two different, I'm American, he's Indian. We have two different cultures coming together. So we're always trying to bring that to the balance instead of letting one, because sometimes traditions and beliefs might be stronger in one culture versus another in our household, and we just try to make sure we're being balanced and well-rounded about it.
All right. Yeah, I wanted to dive into some of the people I read about you helping in your business. There was one, Patrick from, is it Mableville, Arkansas?
Mableville, yeah.
Mableville. So yeah, so he faced a financial instability due to his property being left in disrepair by family tenants. So can you walk us through the process of how Lindsay Sharma Property Buyers was able to provide a solution, not only by buying the damaged property, but also alleviating Patrick's immediate financial stress?
Yeah, so when Patrick called us, he owned the property. He was renting it out to family members, and he was charging them, I believe, just enough to cover his mortgage. And then the family members completely destroyed the property. They moved away, and he was kind of stuck with it for a few months trying to figure out what he wanted to do. And he without having someone live there, he couldn't afford the payments, and he just needed to sell it quickly. So we negotiated a price, and he was at the risk of foreclosure when we were still negotiating and trying to get the contract signed. So we got the contract signed, and I gave him some money up front to pay that mortgage payment just to cover it, give us enough time to close. And we were able to close on the property and help him with that situation.
Okay. And yeah, it's heartwarming to hear about your team's commitment to helping homeowners like Patrick. So in his specific case, how did you determine a fair estimate for the house, considering its condition and the necessary repairs? How did this contribute to the overall positive outcome for him?
I'm sorry, say that question again.
So yeah, so how did you, in his case, how did you guys go about determining a fair price for the house, with it being in the condition that his relatives left it in, sure, while making it work for you and him at the same time?
Yeah. So his initial asking price was probably, it wasn't terribly away far off from what we could offer. I think it was about $15,000 more than what we could really do. We went and looked at the property. There was a really, really strong pet odor. I mean, there was pet urine, feces all over the floors, everywhere. So after seeing the property, we explained to him, this is going to take a lot more more work than we thought. And so we kind of explained our process, what we would need to do to get it, up to 2023 standards or ready for rent. And also my willingness to give him some money up front to help cover that mortgage payment. We talked about those things. I think that really helped him feel comfortable with the sale. Also, I normally like to use the title company that my company deals with regularly because I have a good relationship with them. They give me a discount, but he already had a lot of comfort with a different title company. So we went through his title company. And so there were certain things I was just willing to work with him on in order to get a price that would work for our company, but I was willing to offer him some other conveniences to make him happy. And that's how we always approach things in our company.
Yeah, it's amazing that the house could be left in that condition by relatives. I mean, you've heard of tenants doing that, but these were his relatives?
Yes, and this happens a lot. And what can be really tricky about these situations is sometimes the relationship is so damaged by it that the property owner just doesn't want to even talk to the family member. And sometimes I have to be the one to get in, or my salespeople have to get in and be kind of the mediator of the situation. So I guess that's another benefit that we offer, is just being willing to talk to people that maybe the seller doesn't want to talk to.
Okay. And then it was one more that really stuck out to me. You had a Shirley from, she was a retiree from Johnsonia. Mm-hmm. And she had the dual challenge of dealing with two properties in need of extensive repairs and high interest mortgages. So how did your company approach Shirley's unique situation, particularly with the family's home need for a new roof and the rental properties damaged from a tenant?
Yeah, so we were able to buy the properties. We bought them pretty much at the price that she owed to pay off the mortgages. And that actually worked for us. Her balances were low enough that we could still get the property at a price, leaving us enough buffer for those repairs and everything that needed to be done. And, you know, because we're investors and we're not retail buyers, since she had two properties, which she inherited from family members, these were her family homes. She had a very large family growing up. I think she said she had either 9 or 11 siblings, and they all lived in this small house. And then I think it was another family member had the other house. They were right next to each other. But since we're investors, I was able to buy the package of two properties and, you know, pay off those mortgages and kind of get that headache out of her hair. And she was so grateful for that. But, you know, if she wasn't dealing with investors and she was selling to individuals, she probably wouldn't have been able to sell them both at the same time like that.
Now, was that difficult negotiating, seeing it's, did the house belong to her or all of her siblings as well?
No, it was just her.
Okay. Because yeah. I was going to ask you, that must have been difficult. Easier. Yeah, that would have been quite challenging getting all of them to agree to the term. So, okay.
Yeah, which I market to a lot of probate leads, and we definitely come across those tricky family situations where the siblings can't all agree or they don't agree on price, and it can get a little more challenging. And that's where more, I think, going back to just having those good listening skills and empathetic communication to kind of be able to help mediate again in those situations.
Yeah, definitely. And in your experience with homeowners like Patrick and Shirley, have there been any specific lessons or insights that have shaped the way Lindsay Sharma Property Buyers approaches similar cases?
Yes. So for us, it's really important just to find out what the seller needs in the situation, because people initially, they just always want to throw out a price. They just want to tell you, I need this much money for my home. I need this much money for my home. And you really have to find out, okay, why are they selling? Why are they selling now? What are they going to do next? What are the problems they're encountering? You really have to dig at the situation, because if we don't really, as investors, we have to buy a discount. So if there's not a problem there that we can solve, then we're not going to be a good fit for them. So that's really important to find out.
Okay. Yeah, homeowners facing financial stress often hesitate to seek help, I think. So how do you encourage individuals in difficult situations to reach out to companies like you guys? And what assurances can you provide to those who may be hesitant or both about selling their properties in challenging conditions?
Yeah, so we kind of take an advisor role, just telling them the process. You know, a lot of these people maybe have never gone through a real estate transaction, you know, in their life, or maybe they've only done it once and they just don't really know what to expect. Sometimes the home is in such poor condition that there may be some shame involved and they don't want to show us the property. So it's just really being patient, being a neighbor, being a friend. And, you know, we go on a lot of appointments, so we're meeting them in person, building that trust, building that rapport. And we're very, very, I guess, on top of our follow-ups. You know, we realize it can be very hard to try and close a sale in one call. So we're making multiple calls on every single deal. And just, again, building that trust, building that rapport, to help the seller feel more comfortable with us.
Okay. And how many deals does your company have up in the area at any one time on average?
I guess it just depends. So my company is a little new. I've been in business for less than a year. The busiest month we had was August, and we had 9 contracts in August.
Okay. Okay. And have you seen an uptick in business when I guess you probably came into business right when rates started to accelerate, or right after they started to accelerate. So that's probably kept you pretty busy, right?
Yeah. So it's interesting. I feel like, so because we wholesale, we do sell a lot of properties to other investors, fix and flippers, and landlords. And so I've seen some buying activity slow down on that end with interest rates increasing, but not significantly. There's still just, we constantly build our buyers list, so there's just always people buying. But I think with this year, usually, you know, the winter time can be a little slow, but this January, it's been pretty busy for us. I think, unfortunately, with the economy and inflation, people who have these properties and land and things like that, that maybe they don't really have a use for, are starting to think like, oh, I need that money. And I think more people are selling right now.
Okay. All right. And let's jump into the lightning round questions now. So let's see what kind of motivates you. So just your favorite real estate strategy you've implemented so far.
I love creating notes. So I'll buy a property and sell it on owner financing.
Okay. Do you do it? How many of those have you done thus far?
I think I have five notes right now.
Okay. And just, are you working in multiple states or is there any particular states you like?
So I'm working in Central Arkansas, Little Rock. I did test out my hometown, Toledo, Ohio. And I've decided to put it on hold for now just because we've had a few deals under contract, but they didn't work out. And it's just kind of a tougher market for us because it is a depressed economy there. So,
okay. All right. And having worked for a real estate investor, this might be an easy one for you, but best piece of advice you've received as an entrepreneur in the real estate industry?
Best piece of advice would be, I mean, it's kind of generic, but basically networking. A mentor recommended the book Who Not How, and that book made a really big impact on me because I realized I don't have to learn how to do everything myself. I can learn who knows this that I can partner up with. And so real estate is very collaborative. And I think it's kind of unique that maybe in comparison to some other industries. So partnering up can be a really good option, I think, in real estate investing.
Definitely, definitely. Okay, and if you could collaborate, speaking of collaborations, if you can collaborate with any real estate expert or mentor, who would it be?
Oh my goodness. That's a really tough question. You know, I really like Steve Trang. I listen to a lot of his content. He has the Real Estate Disruptor podcast, and I just think it'd be a lot of fun to work with him.
Okay. And top three must-have qualities for success in the real estate business.
Definitely persistence, grit, and willingness to learn. It's just constant learning.
Okay. Agree. Definitely agree. All right. And last one, favorite real estate market trend. Well, not last one, actually. Favorite real estate market trend you're keeping an eye on right now.
So I would say pad sharing, which is people who are buying properties and then renting them out by the room. I think there's just, because housing, there's still a housing crisis, housing's becoming less and less affordable, rents keep going up. I think there's just gonna be more demand for more creative living situations. So I find that really interesting. And then I'm still waiting. I keep hearing about the silver tsunami that's coming. And so I'm keeping an eye on that, waiting to see what happens there.
Okay. And so you have three kids. Morning person or night owl?
I am a morning person.
Okay.
I'm in bed by 9, and sometimes my kids like want to stay up longer than I do, and it's pretty tiring.
Yeah, same here. I'm in bed by 9 and up by 4 or 5, so.
Yeah.
Okay, and coffee or tea during a long day of property transactions?
Oh boy. So I love, love, love coffee. A little bit of a coffee nerd. When I was a designer, I actually worked for a coffee company startup, and they would send me free coffee every single week. And, you know, part of my job was designing. They were kind of very big on content creation. So I would design like these guides and things for them. So I learned how to make my coffee at a French press and like learn how to different water affects your coffee. So I could go on and on, but definitely coffee.
Okay. Very cool. All right. And most rewarding aspect of helping homeowners in tough situations?
Just hearing their relief when you're able to take the property off their hands and make it an easy, hassle-free transaction for them. People are really grateful that you're able to help them. And that's just really, really nice to see.
Okay. Okay. And that last one for sure. All right, one word to describe the feeling when you successfully close a challenging deal.
It's just usually relief and excitement. And it's kind of like, oh, yep, this is why we do this. Because there's definitely times when you run into some challenges. And because real estate can be complex and you're always learning, you know, it's, you'll come across things where you're like, I don't know what that means, or I've never seen that before. So, yeah.
Okay. Awesome. All right, Lindsay. Yeah, this has been great having you on. I'm sure most of our listeners found this truly valuable. So thanks so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it. We hope to have you on again sometime. So.
All right. Thank you, Donald. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you so much. You have a great evening.
You too.
Well, folks, that wraps up another insightful episode of Dealmaker Diaries. We hope you enjoyed today's deep dive into the world of strategic dealmaking. Before we go, a quick reminder. If you like what you heard today and want to stay updated on all things deals, be sure to hit that subscribe button on your favorite podcast platform. And hey, we love hearing from our community, so don't forget to leave us a review. Your feedback not only helps us improve, but also lets other deal enthusiasts discover the show. So whether you're listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, take a moment to share your thoughts. As always, thank you for joining us on Dealmaker Diaries. Keep those negotiation skills sharp. Stay tuned for more expert insights. And until next time, make those deals happen. This is Don Thomas signing off.